Hello, and welcome to episode 52 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a former Clevelander but lifelong Cavs fan. My co-host tonight is Joshua Jameson, Pittsburgh resident, host of the world-famous Blue Line Reconstructed podcast, and sometimes Cavs fan. How's it going, Josh?
Sometimes Cavs fan. Not a Cavs fan tonight, but still on a Cavs podcast.
That is, they only lost by 29. That's not so bad.
Only 29. I mean, I've lost by, you know, more in my dreams. But Blue Line Reconstruction, just to be
clear. Oh, did I get the name wrong? I'm sorry.
I got the name wrong. It is the premier Columbus Blue Jackets podcast who have clinched the playoffs for only the third time in franchise history. So check that out.
I'm sure everyone will just run over right now. As for this show, you can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. We actually have an announcement about some stuff with the show. It's all good. We're not going anywhere. I'm not quite sure how I want to phrase this announcement yet, so I'm going to save that for next episode. That's a little teaser.
That is very cagey of you.
Was that good? Like, would you be interested in listening to the next show if you'd heard that on your favorite podcast?
We should just keep doing that for every episode. Stay tuned for
the
next
news
episode.
Is I had rigatoni for dinner tonight.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so the Cavs got shellacked again tonight. Seems like they've lost every game in March, but I think they're actually 6-8 in March. They were 10-5 in March last year when everybody was panicking. And this is worse than that.
Yeah, there's something going on with this team that is demonstrably different than what was happening 2 years ago or last year. There's it never happened this late in the season. The last two seasons, the team was starting to put it together. They, at this point, 2 years ago, as well as last year, really, they were becoming this dominant team. And last year, they were never this bad on defense. They were 10th in defensive efficiency. So I know that we keep bringing it back to this one topic, but I think it's incredibly important because I think it would be foolish to simply write this off and say the Cavs are going to be okay, because I think there's something different about this situation than the one in the past. It's probably too much to take it to the complete other side and completely panic, but I do think it's something that is worth mentioning.
Well, how do you even quantify what the right amount of concern is? Like, so for example, if I bring this up, so the Cavs are still basically 1-3 favorites to win the Eastern Conference. So if you bet $3, you would win $1. And the Celtics are 4-1, the Wizards are 10-1, and the Raptors are 18-1. Does that seem right to you?
At this point, I am legitimately starting to become worried about the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think, obviously, they're going to have good odds for the title because they're coming out of the East and they have LeBron James. Right. And those two things, it is very hard to put into numbers how much better a team will be when LeBron James is in the playoffs, when he doesn't have to play back-to-backs, when he's well-rested. But without JR being able to play, without a shooting guard being able to play passable defense, I'm just not sure how this thing works.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to the shooting guard thing. So do you think that the Cavs have a 75% chance of winning the East? Because that's what Vegas thinks right now.
I don't either.
In fact, I just put a bunch of money on the three teams I just mentioned, Celtics, Wizards, and Raptors, just because I think, look, I want the Cavs to win, but I think that there's some money to be made there right now. And if the Cavs end up playing better, then I'll just hedge later. They look so bad right now. I think they're still the odds-on favorite to win the East. Like, I would pick the Cavs over any of those other three teams. But I don't think they're 75%. I think they're probably right around 50% or maybe like 45% or something like that.
I think if we go through the teams, specifically the Wizards and the Celtics and the Raptors, I'm not afraid of because Kyle Lowry has been injured and I don't think he's going to be 100% come the playoffs.
Okay.
I think the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas.
He would have a whole extra month to get ready. Well, an extra 3 weeks of playoff games.
Well, how
so he's supposed to be back for the playoffs, and in the scenario where we're playing the Raptors, it would probably be the Eastern Conference Finals, although maybe not. They may end up in the 2 or 3 seed.
Right. So I guess that's kind of up in the air. Yeah, he'll have a lot of time. He's had some past problems with being able to play efficiently in the playoffs, so that's a concern. But some people might argue that's because he's the type of player that plays really hard in the regular season and he was burning out. Maybe with this time to rest and given a month of ramp up, maybe he will be really good. But right now that's an unknown, so I'm going to dock them for it.
Okay.
The Celtics, Isaiah Thomas.
The Raptors, by the way, are 18-1 to win the East. This is a team that took the Cavs 6 games to get through in the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Yeah.
And a team that has improved from last year. They have Ibaka now.
Ibaka, and they got, I'm totally blanking. Who do they get from the Suns? PJ Tucker, who's a pretty decent wing defender. So
yeah,
they,
he's good on LeBron. They got him specifically to defend LeBron James.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, basically anytime you can find a wing who can play defense and not be an utter total failure on offense, you're going to want that player, regardless of if LeBron James is in your conference or not. But certainly with the rotation that involves Ibaka, Patterson, PJ Tucker, and Kyle Lowry, they're formidable for sure. I just, that unknown of Kyle Lowry is a lot. And DeMar DeRozan is a minus.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree that they're not as good as the Cavs, but 18-1 to win the conference?
I would definitely take that money. Like
$10 wins you 180.
I'll send you some money after this to put some money down on them.
Okay, look, for starters, online gambling in the United States is illegal, so I would never do such a thing. I was just speaking hypothetically before, and Josh was just speaking hypothetically as well.
Absolutely. We are all law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
Sorry, NSA.
Okay, so we've got the Raptors at 18-1. All right, let's do Wizards next. The Wizards are 10-1 to win the East.
Well, I mean,
and they just beat the Cavs.
Yeah, I was just going to go back to the Raptors. There's not as much of a matchup problem there for me, right? Like
Wizards or with the Raptors?
With the Raptors.
Oh, sure.
That's where the Wizards are very different. And I was actually going to do the Wizards last because I think the Wizards represent the biggest matchup problem for the Cavs. Where do you hide Kyrie? With John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, where do you hide him? Do you hide him on Gortat?
And there's another problem, which is like, where do you hide like JR or Shumpert or Korver or Derek Williams or whoever the shooting guard du jour is? Because none of those guys are playing great defense. I mean, maybe Williams is playing okay defense, but he shouldn't be playing. If he's getting, you know, more than, say, 10 minutes a game in the playoffs, we have other problems. But yeah, I mean, the Cavs don't have anyone they don't have any guards that can guard anyone right now.
And that's the problem and the difference between this year and the previous years is that last year JR was playing not just passable defense, but I would argue good defense. And when you have two minuses on defense, like Kevin Love, who I don't think he's quite as bad as we say he is, but he's still weak in pick and roll defense.
Sure.
And Kyrie Irving, who is seemingly better in the playoffs, but still not going to be good. When you don't have anyone who can play shooting guard, what do you do?
The numbers back up that he was better in the playoffs last year. And I heard on the other Cavs Daily podcast. What is that one called? The one with Chris Manning?
Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, Locked On Cavs. Today, I think they were talking about how Irving's defense, maybe more than anyone else, sort of depends on LeBron's energy. So, you know, maybe it's the case that, you know, as LeBron is sort of mailing it in during this regular season, so is Kyrie defensively. That is what happened last year. It's just hard to know what's real and what's not. But yeah, sorry to interrupt. But yeah, the Cavs don't have anyone who can defend at the guard position.
Yeah, and with Kyrie on defense, in the playoffs he was certainly better. But I think maybe one of his bigger weaknesses, and I think Zach Lowe actually wrote an article about this last year, is he doesn't seem to call out good coverage in the pick and roll for whoever is guarding the big man. So in Kevin Love's case, Kevin Love doesn't have good pick and roll instincts to begin with, and he's also slow. And when you don't communicate and say, hey, you know, you need to hedge here or you need ice here, that makes it. I mean, you're leaving a guy who's already at a disadvantage on an island.
I mean, should Kyrie be the guy making those calls?
Well, I believe that's how it normally happens. Is that the
But like, when somebody who can,
that the point or the small man basically who's playing defense in the pick and roll is going to call out the coverage. But no, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's supposed to be part of a system, and I think right now the Cavs don't have a coherent defensive system. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we got some questions on that on Reddit. I was surprised. You posted something to Reddit soliciting questions, and we got like 3 or 4. So yeah, we'll get
seven questions even.
Well, 7 comments. How many of those were actual questions?
7.
Okay, we'll audit that later in the show.
Okay, you keep going, I'll count.
You're quickly posting under your fake accounts right now to get it up to 7.
It's 6 different people, but a few of them asked multiple different questions.
Okay, all right, fine. Okay, all right. So the Wizards are a matchup issue, and they just beat the Cavs. I still think we would beat any of these teams in a series, but it's getting close. It's getting to the point where, you know, instead of me saying like, oh, no problem, the Cavs win in 5, it's more like, well, I think it goes 6 or 7, and if some things go wrongly, I think the Cavs might lose. Okay, and then that brings us to the Celtics. The Celtics aren't nearly the matchup issue that the Wizards are.
Right.
I don't love Isaiah Thomas. I especially sort of salivate at the idea of Kyrie Irving going in full playoff mode offensively against Isaiah Thomas. I think that could go nicely. But they're a good team. They've been playing well. And if the Cavs play like they have for the last month, they'll lose.
I agree with that. I also agree with your sentiment that they're not as much of a matchup issue as the Wizards. Isaiah Thomas, awful on defense, but also one of the Celtics' biggest strengths is their depth. And depth, once you get to the playoffs, is not as much of an issue. The Cavs are going to shorten down to an 8-man rotation or 9 on a good night. And so, you know, the fact that they have that longer bench is not going to play well for them. And Tristan Thompson, I think, we have a large enough sample size to just say that Al Horford really struggles against Tristan Thompson. So
yeah.
If Thompson's going to be good in the playoffs, then I'm not as worried, at least, about the Celtics than I am about the Wizards. I think you can, Jay Crowder, for example, great player, Avery Bradley, great player, but you can more easily hide a guy like Kyrie on defense against those two type of players who don't create on their own naturally,
right,
than you can against a guy when you have Bradley Beal and John Wall as the backcourt.
Yeah, or Otto Porter. Yeah, just to be like absolutely clear here, I still think the Cavs are going to win the East, or at least I think it's about even odds. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's so much talk in the Cavs, you know, Twitter sphere and on Reddit and on Fear the Sword and on Real Cavs Fans of this debate about how real is the way the Cavs are playing right now. You know, how much of it is just sort of March malaise and laziness versus an actual indicator of a change in team ability? And, you know, nobody knows. The optimists keep saying like, oh, it's going to be fine. The pessimists say the sky's falling. And I just don't know where I fall in that. There are some weird paradoxes. So, for example, the Cavs would try to forward the narrative that they're not going at 100% and they're not doing everything they can to win games. But if that's the case, why is LeBron leading the NBA in minutes? Why is Tristan Thompson like grinding his knee tendonitis into dust so that he's going to be sort of compromised for the playoffs? Why is, I don't know. Actually, that's sort of it. My list of like major complaints. Well, I just think that like if they were serious about getting maximally prepared for the playoffs, it might involve resting the stars, I think. Is that crazy?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's crazy. And I think especially at this point where we're now second in the East, this would be the time now you could rectify those mistakes. Like, you might as well, you're not going to get number one, so it doesn't matter. You might as well just, I mean, fall down all the way to 5 if you can. I don't think it makes that big of a difference. The only difference it makes is like gate revenue. So,
yeah. Does it? I'm sure the Cavs have every game sold out.
Well, I meant, do you only get the gate revenue on your own playoff games? So if you, if every game went to seven, you have one less game per playoff series. But
yeah, I think that does matter. But there's some revenue sharing too, and it's complicated. Is the short answer there?
Right, but yeah, I think I think maybe the problem is I'm not sure the Cavs as an organization have a coherent understanding of what they want to do and achieve.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't have the longest view in the room.
Right. It's always been something I've wondered about. So some of the players have to play with each other to some amount. They have to build chemistry together. And so, like, for example, you couldn't just put LeBron on ice the entire season and then bring him in for the playoffs and expect him to play at the level that he did last year. Like, he has to play some. Just to, I don't know, he has to stay fresh and his teammates need to learn how to be in the right places. And so some synergies are developed by playing with each other. But I don't think LeBron needs to play 38 minutes to develop those synergies. And certainly playing 38 minutes at 40% effort is not accomplishing anything. So, oh well, whatever. We talk about this every episode. The Cavs aren't going to change the rest prescription, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I just wish that if they were going to not rest, they didn't try to like sell us this thing that they're not trying, because if they weren't trying, then they would have like a more aggressive rest schedule, I think.
Yeah. I mean, professional sports organizations are bullshit. Like, they constantly bullshit. They constantly lie. And again, in the Cavs case, I'm not sure they know what they're supposed to say and what they're supposed to do. I think they're just doing what's in front of them, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to rest in the future. And they really don't know. They have no plan. There's no actionable ideas floating around. I think they just react.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a fairly dark take on it that might be pretty close to the truth. For example, like with Tristan Thompson, he has this games played streak, right? And I'm sure that's important to Tristan. Whose responsibility is it to step in and tell Tristan that they don't want to keep that going anymore?
Well, I would say that directive needs to come from the front office.
Yeah, I think management, not Tyronn Lue. Like, Tyronn Lue should be incentivized to win games.
His job is to win games. Players' jobs is to win games as well.
Then the management can put various handcuffs on him, like say, look, you're not allowed to play LeBron more than 34 minutes. Tristan's going to miss two of the next five games. You can choose which ones, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, start Tristan Thompson, play him 3 minutes, and then sit him the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the media would have a fit over that, but there are things they can do to...
I mean, listen, it's been like, what, a month since the latest Cavs drama? The media needs something to have a fit over.
Throw them a bone already.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so I guess we haven't talked much about the actual game tonight. Is there any signal to take from this? So the Spurs won 103-74. Kawhi Leonard played very well. The Spurs generally played very well. Kyrie in particular was pretty bad. Kyrie was minus 26, J.R. Smith minus 27, Tristan minus 26, Love minus 19, James was minus 13. So, as usual, LeBron's the best player on the Cavs. Do you think... Yeah, I just don't know. Is there any signal to take from this? Like, you know, let's say you thought the Cavs were slightly better than the Spurs before this. Do you still think that? Do you not think that anymore? Has this adjusted your expectations in any way?
I'm not sure that my understanding of either team has changed. There is a signal insofar as it confirms what I already believed and knew to be true. The Cavs struggled in transition defense all night. The Spurs pushed it all night. And, I mean, part of it is they shot 4-for-26 from three. And, you know, if that's 7-for-26, it doesn't look quite as bad, right? They shot 31-for-83, 37% from the field overall. So, yeah. I mean, do I expect the Cavs to shoot 37% from the field every time they play the Spurs? Absolutely not. but the problem remains, which is the defense. And so, you know, generally, no, I don't think that this means that the Spurs would win in four games in a playoff series against the Cavs.
Yeah. I don't think it would be four. I think it would be tough. I tweeted before the game. I'm not sure. I've been holding this concern for a while now that Kawhi Leonard, I think LeBron James is a better player than Kawhi Leonard, but I worry that Kawhi Leonard's specific skill set is sort of the antidote to LeBron James's.
It is.
Being able to put Kawhi on LeBron just makes LeBron significantly less effective. He was okay tonight, LeBron was, but Kawhi gives him trouble. It's interesting to watch.
I totally agree. And as the game wore on, when they weren't putting Kawhi on LeBron quite as much, that's when LeBron finally managed to start kind of breaking out.
Yes.
But, you know, it works both ways. If Kawhi is going to spend most of his time focusing on LeBron, Kawhi is not going to be able to run the offense in San Antonio as much, which is not as big of an issue for the Spurs as it is when you take LeBron out of the Cavs, obviously. The Cavs cannot win at all without LeBron James. But it is a minus. You have Tony Parker, who can't play defense whatsoever, barely can score anymore. And so Kyrie would eat him up. I mean, you're going to put Danny Green on Kyrie. But again, it comes back. It's not a terrible matchup because I think Love can handle LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah. But if you had a functional shooting guard who could really take advantage of Tony Parker, that would be a game changer.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get to the shooting guards in a second, but we should probably talk about the LeBron injury. Did you get a good look at that?
Yeah. So it looked like, I believe, David Lee kind of came down on right on LeBron's spine with his elbow. And it didn't look that bad when you watched it in video, but it's hard to tell because when you hit a spot like that, it can be very sensitive.
Yeah, they had a report from Dennis Scott, who was the TNT sideline reporter tonight, and LeBron was apparently on the trainer's table getting treatment. They weren't categorizing what kind of injury it was, so yeah, hopefully he just got hit in a weird place and he shakes it off and is fine. But if not, good excuse to give him a couple games off.
Yeah, or the world ends.
Yeah, well, right. Look, if he's actually hurt, then so help us God. But I think he'll be fine. Okay, well, let's move on to the shooting guard situation. So the Cavs have, I guess, three shooting guards. They have Kyle Korver, Iman Shumpert, and J.R. Smith. I guess Derek Williams is kind of a shooting guard. Richard Jefferson is kind of a shooting guard. But mostly it's those three guys. And all three of them are either injured or playing poorly or both right now, which is not really where you want to be 8 games before the playoffs start. Do you think any of those guys are going to come around? Like, what is your feeling on, should we go through them one by one?
That would be a miserable
it's going to be a pretty depressing analysis. I mean, let's start with J.R. Smith, right? So for the entire season, or for the entire middle third of the season, we were sold this hope that J.R. Smith is going to come back and be the same guy as he was last year. Unfortunately, he was bad for the first third of the season before he got hurt. He's been even worse since he's come back, and he just looks like a, you know, sort of psychological mess out there. Like, every time he blows a play, he just, like, sort of hangs his head down, and it's painful to watch, and it's hard for me to project anything good coming out of that in the next, say, 2 months.
Of any of the shooting guards that we currently have on the roster, J.R. Smith still has the highest upside. Darren Williams is going to be able to play offense, but cannot play defense. And Shumpert, I don't think Shumpert plays defense, and he can't play offense. And Korver, obviously, basically is only offense as well. But yeah, JR, I still think, has the best hope on the team. And part of the JR...
Well, is that because you think the other ones have zero hope and JR has like 1 out of 100 hope?
Well, no, I don't think the other players have zero hope. I think Darren Williams and Korver still bring something to the table. They just don't have the... They have no possibility of having... of bringing a plus defensive impact as well as a plus offensive impact.
Yeah.
Korver can obviously be a plus on offense. Darren Williams sometimes could be a plus on offense, but J.R. Smith remains the only one who could be a positive on both ends. And while although I don't think there's a great chance, and I'm pretty pessimistic, I do think that part of the J.R. Smith roller coaster has always been these kind of slumps. And this is obviously a little bit more aggressive, but I think as basketball fans, as sports fans, we underrate the impact of injuries. And it was an injury to a shooting hand. And so I don't know. I think it is really hard for me to believe that he's going to only get 7 shots up a game. And part of his problem right now is he can't create any space for himself because he's not putting the ball down at all. It's really one-dimensional. But
the last time he put the ball on the floor was 2 years ago or whatever, in the finals of last year.
I still think that he could break out of it. I'm not saying he will, but
you haven't given up hope, in other words.
There's some hope.
I do not share your optimism there. I'm not sure. I mean, I think the Cavs need to keep kicking the tires on that and give him a chance, because what's the alternative? James Jones. But I don't have real high expectations for him breaking out of his malaise. That bums me out. But I mean, I think that's the reality there. Like, you know, let's say you had to bet on it. You wouldn't bet on it, right?
Well, what are the odds?
Let's say it's even odds, right? Like for him to improve on his like season long trajectory or something.
No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that sucks. I'm not sure the Cavs can win the finals without at least an average player at shooting guard. And right now there's no one on the roster that looks like they can get there for the playoffs. I think I'm sort of bearing the lead here. I think Shumpert can be functional. I think his offense has been a little bit, I'm not going to say it goes so far as to say a revelation this year, but it's been better than I was thinking it might be. His role will be diminished there in the playoffs. He'll just be shooting open threes and hopefully less of those deep off the dribble twos that he's been taking more than I'd like to see this year. And I think that his athleticism means that he has the potential to play good defense, and he has at times in the past. If we're going to give Kyrie and LeBron hall passes for their terrible defense at times this season, I don't see why we don't do the same for Iman Shumpert. And I think that, maybe he can be a functional shooting guard. Am I crazy?
Well, I think Iman Shumpert's struggles defensively are a little bit different than LeBron and Kyrie's, whereas you can see the lack of effort from those two. I think Shumpert is a lack of intelligence, and that intelligence has never been there. And so I see what you're saying. He definitely has the physical attributes, but I'm not sure that this is an effort problem. So I'm not sure.
Well, he's quick. He has great hands. Okay. He's bad at getting over screens. If the Cavs switch everything like they have at times, I think that's mitigated a little bit. And if he, I don't know, can you learn how to like get better at screens in 2 weeks? No, that's not a thing.
I don't know. Getting through screens is in some ways an effort game. I think he gets back cut a ton. And as an off ball defender, that's a really bad trait to have. Now, is Klay Thompson going to back cut on him? Yeah, all day. So is Steph Curry going to back cut on him? Yeah, all day. But the good news is that Kevin Durant went to the Warriors, so we have our excuse built in.
Yeah, we do have a built-in excuse here. It's not because we're terrible. It's because they acquired Durant unfairly or something. Yeah, I mean, the Cavs are in Shumpert, go ahead.
Iman Shumpert is 44th in shooting guard DRPM.
How about JR?
He's on the first page. I had to go
is
back.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's on the first page.
Surprised.
He is 39th.
Ooh, nice. Separated by 5. That seems significant.
Mike Miller is 27th.
Nice. Is that maybe we can get the Nuggets to waive him and we can?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
This is such an unenviable position. Like, they need to choose between like terrible JR, gimpy Kyle Korver, no defense Iman Shumpert, champ James Jones, or Derek Williams, who hasn't hit a shot in March. So it's looking sort of got a platter of garbage there that they have to choose from. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to... Go ahead.
Would you consider Derek Williams as a guy who's filling the two-guard spot? It's kind of more of like a 3-4.
I generally consider LeBron the three. And so, you know, if he's playing 44 minutes in the playoffs, as he's going to have to. Yeah, I mean, I guess LeBron's sometimes the four and Williams is the three. And yeah, the Cavs never go big. So, yeah, I guess Derek Williams doesn't play the two at all. Darren Williams should probably be included in the shooting guard list.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that's what it was. And I misread it. They're going to play Love at center and LeBron at the four a lot. And LeBron guards the rim. That's kind of their favorite lineup.
Arniv suggested to me that the Cavs start Darren Williams and move Irving to shooting guard.
Well, you're not going to... you don't really move Irving to shooting guard. It's kind of, you know, it's positionless. Like, he's going to guard the weaker of the two players.
Yeah, I guess in that case, Darren is on the, Darren is defending whoever's the strongest of the two guards.
Right.
In that scenario.
Right.
Would the Cavs have enough height there? Irving is 6'4". How tall is Thompson? 6'5"?
Thompson, do you mean... Darren Williams?
No, I mean Clay Thompson.
Clay Thompson, I think, is 6'6".
Well, I mean, he's going to get his anyway. So, basically make it easier.
Clay Thompson's 6'7". And, I mean, he hasn't had a great season this year. So
that's right. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine putting Irving on him. Nothing bad can happen.
Well, hey, I mean, they won a series finals on it. So
yeah, except we had JR doing stuff then.
Yeah, and actually he covered Clay, he covered Steph a lot.
Right.
When I said that Clay Thompson wasn't having a great season, I just meant he was the fifth best shooting guard by RPM. So not a great season. Like, he's only just behind Lou Williams.
Yeah, he's a marginal all-star. Man. Yeah, it's rough. Should we get to these Reddit questions?
Yes, we should.
Do you have the window open?
I have it open.
Should we go by order of vote, or how should we do this?
I
think that's a good order.
I upvoted all of them, so.
Oh, so that's why these all have two votes.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Some of them have more than two.
Okay. Sorted by best. Here we go. We sort of already answered this one, but this one comes from Browskis. Do you believe the defensive woes have been due to the team's sets or schemes, or do you believe it comes down to individual defense or a mix of both?
Well, it's a mix of both. The narrative the team is trying to sell us is that it's effort. So I guess in this case, it would be, you know, quote unquote, individual defense. As we've discussed a little bit already, I don't necessarily believe that narrative, or I'm not quite sure what to make of that narrative. The Cavs' sets have been sort of, I don't know what the right word here is, amateurish or simple, the last.
Chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, they're not trapping people on screens. They're not doing anything fancy defensively, in other words. So I think Lou mentioned after last game that he has like a secret formula that he's waiting to deploy in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, Tyron. I'll believe that when I see it. And also, this sort of gets back to my previous question. Like, let's say you do have sets that you think are better than others. Don't you need to like sort of practice executing that in real NBA games? Or can you just sort of unveil that all of a sudden and be perfect at it?
They probably have the thought that this team has been together long enough that those sort of sets were already used and they're already familiar with them.
Well, then why play the starters at all? Let's just not play the rest of the season. We'll be comfortable with the 5 seed and get everybody some rest. Like, what's the point of playing basketball games?
I totally agree with that. Obviously, I don't think they have a coherent understanding of...
I think there's some degree of like staying sharp and developing recent cohesion. I think that sort of fades. I mean, they always talk about it like, oh, if you get like a long break between games, and that's only like at most like 7 days, they're like, oh, you know, the team is rusty or whatever. So I do think that there's some effect where you have to play together. But these guys have played together a lot. Maybe they should err on the side of rest instead of erring on the side of running them into the ground.
Yeah, I think what's happening is, I think what Ty Lue is hinting at is a more aggressive defensive set, trapping a little bit more or stronger hedges on pick and roll defense, as well as a lot more rotating, or switching rather, which will lead obviously to more rotating. And I could see that becoming a problem when the team sort of knows that that's eventually where they're going to go, but that's not where you are right now. So how do you run that middle ground defense? Well, what's happening is they're over rotating on everything.
Yeah, and you see a lot of like the help person flying by the person on offense.
Exactly. It's completely chaotic. And so that could be due to a lack of communication on how the coaches want to execute the defensive game plan. I also think that is the over rotating is a symptom of not trusting your rim protector. And Tristan Thompson has not been very good lately, and he's never been an excellent rim protector. So that has something to do with it. We just talked ad nauseum at the beginning of this podcast and the podcast before that and the podcast before that and the 20 before that about the effort on defense. So that's certainly part of it as well.
Yeah, it's. I guess the answer to this question is it's definitely a combination. Well, it's hopefully a combination, right? So hopefully it's they have something they have not yet revealed, and they are sandbagging on whether it's on purpose. I don't think they're sandbagging on purpose. I think it's a convenient excuse to say like, oh, well, you know, I think on the, you know, Richard Jefferson podcast, he was like, oh, I haven't seen LeBron at 100% this year yet. I think all that stuff is sort of cognitive dissonance. Like they're just
right.
Not trying very hard for whatever reason. And I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional, but I do think that they will step up the effort come playoff time.
Certainly.
But anyway, yeah, that's probably not a very satisfying answer to that question. But I'm concerned that the defense is actually bad.
And I think what you just said about cognitive dissonance, that's what I'm trying to say is going up and down throughout the entire organization. Because we keep saying, okay, well, maybe this is what they think, but they're not fully fleshing out any of their plans. They're trying to keep this middle ground and not do any of them, and not do any of them well. At least they're not fully resting, and they're not, I don't know, anyways. Yeah.
They're in a weird purgatory where they're sort of hedging on both sides and causing mistakes on both sides. The next question
is right along the same lines. Can you guys from Alex Hindershot, can you guys shed light on what good defense is? Since our abysmal defense is such a hot topic, I'd like a better evaluation of what good defense is and how teams implement defensive strategies. It's also been thrown around lately that good defense is mostly just additional effort and that we're not we're coasting into the playoffs. So is it effort, strategy, both? Thanks. So, okay, one, I think we can do this one really quickly. Can you shed light on what good defense is? Not allowing the other team to score is the best kind of defense.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, look, sarcasm aside, like, I mean, the symptom of good defense is fewer points per possession from the opposing offense. The things that the Cavs are doing poorly in particular, at least to my eye, and look, I'm not an expert in actually much having to do with basketball. I just watch a lot of games. But to my eye, they are getting really messed up on the simple pick and roll. And, you know, the pick and roll is the bread and butter play of every basketball team in the history of basketball. And for some reason, the Cavs are not able to cover that well. And teams are being able to run simple action against the Cavs defense and get somebody, you know, more wide open more frequently than is appropriate. And they need to figure out how to fix that. Part of it's effort. So part of it is, you know, you get picked, you have the choice. You can go under the screen, you can go over the screen, or you can switch. And the Cavs seem to do the wrong thing every possession, and it's frustrating to watch, but hopefully they can get that sorted. What do you think, Josh?
Oh, well, I was just going to move on. I think that's satisfying. We've talked about defense enough.
Yeah.
This is from S_S. How good of a predictor can regular season stats be with regards to projecting playoff success? Well,
I love this question, by the way.
You do? You love it, you said?
Well, I have some thoughts on it, but why don't you give yours first?
Well, I was going to say it's about as good of a predictor as we can have. Our only option is to take what we know, which can be observed during the regular season, and try to extrapolate that to some degree to the postseason. Apart from that, that's just going to be guessing and making things up. So I'm not sure if I'm obviously I'm a little bit simplifying what the question is trying to get at.
Yeah. But it's an interesting existential question, right? It's like, what's the point of the regular season if we're just going to say the entire regular season, like, oh, they're not trying, so nothing here matters. And that is the narrative that we're like being force fed right now by the beat reporters. By the team via the beat reporters. And I think specifically with LeBron, it's sort of an interesting thing. So, you know, the narrative on LeBron is that he is, you know, he takes it to another level in the playoffs, right? Like, would you agree that that's the...
It's also proven backed by stats.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to pull this up because I think it's sort of interesting. So playoffs per 36 minutes in his career. Maybe we should just do last year, since last year is the year the Cavs won. In the playoffs, LeBron played how many minutes per game? Well, I'm looking at per 36 minute stats, so that teases out the minutes per game thing. So he averaged 24.2 points, 8.8 rebounds, and 7.0 assists per 36 minutes. In the regular season last year, he averaged 25 points, so slightly better scoring. 8.0 rebounds, so slightly worse rebounding, and 8.4 assists, so slightly better, actually significantly better assists. So at least the superficial box score statistics are almost exactly the same. Let's see, let me see if I can get true shooting percentage in the playoffs here. In the playoffs last year, LeBron's true shooting percentage was 61.9. Actually, sorry, that's wrong. In the regular season last year, LeBron's true shooting percentage was 58.8. In the playoffs, his true shooting percentage was 58.5. So shot basically identical. I don't know.
That all true shooting goes down a little bit during the
right.
Playoffs,
so, so there's a mitigating factor here, which is in the playoffs, you're playing better opposition. The teams you're playing are definitionally the you know, top 16 teams in the NBA are the only ones to make the playoffs. And the defense is much more intense. And I think, you know, there's always this adage like, you know, good defense beats good offense. In the playoffs, scoring is way down. Teams are, you know, more deliberate in their sets. There are fewer possessions. And so that matters. I guess this is all sort of a long-winded way of saying you can't – I don't think that like – and LeBron, by the way – yeah, sorry, just to tie this to my original point. LeBron, by the way, is famous for getting better in the playoffs. But as I think I just demonstrated, like there's not like a massive difference between his regular season performance, at least by box score statistics. Now, as you start looking at advanced stats, the picture becomes a little bit less murky. Like LeBron does play better in the playoffs. His adjusted box plus minus is significantly better. And there are some other metrics that show that he improves as well. Plus, there's all the rings he has, despite often not being the number one seed coming out of the Eastern Conference, which is the weaker conference. So I guess my official answer to this question is it's an indicator, but it doesn't really tell the whole picture. And the whole picture, as always, is told better by advanced stats than the simple ones. Do you have anything you want to say on that?
I guess what I would say is, back to the original question of how good of a predictor regular season stats can be in regards to projecting playoff success, we have a pretty good understanding of how it's easy to tell when our predictions are, it's easy to adjust for how our predictions are off, I guess. And so bringing it back to the original point is, we have these numbers and it's the only data we actually have. And we try to layer it with as much useful signal type data that we can to to create a usable number. And in practice, you can see how accurate those predictions are and then adjust your measurement, which is what a lot of these projection systems do.
Sure. Sure. What you're saying is if there is a difference, there's some coefficient you can multiply everything by to get like the right expectation.
Well, you know, maybe not mathematically, but at least you can do it. Like you can use it. It is better to have a base level of I'm building my opinion and understanding off of this thing rather than just out of the abyss and pulling thoughts out of narrative and, you know, what have you. It is a better starting point, at least.
Right. Yeah. I think there's another thing that I just want to mention here quickly. I do think I was listening to Dunked On today, and they were talking about Russell Westbrook, and they were doing a ranking of who they think the top 10 players in the NBA are this year. And they both had LeBron at number one in his own tier, and then they had various different players in their second tier. But they're trying to separate Westbrook and Harden. And one of the things they mentioned was Westbrook plays at an 11, you know, in terms of effort all season long. And so when the playoffs come, you know, maybe he can take it up to 12. This is, I'm basically parroting their exact words here, but like the gap between 11 and 12 is less than the difference between 6 and 9, which is what it might be for James Harden or LeBron James. And so anyway, they preferred Harden over Westbrook for that reason. But I thought that was sort of an interesting point. Like, LeBron is just very visibly and very obviously coasting. And we don't know like what the gap between LeBron now and postseason LeBron is going to be, but we can say fairly reliably, especially based on historical data, that he's going to step it up. I just don't know whether it'll be enough. And I don't know how to like write an actual translation layer for that. It's a tricky problem.
If you were tasked with creating an advanced triple-double, or I don't know what he means by that, an advanced triple-double using plus or minus stats, game score, floor, location-based statistics that could define when a player has an exceptional all-around single-game performance, what would it look like? Well, I would say there already is a number for this called game score, and you should go look that up. I think if you were going to use floor location-based statistics to layer onto what game score already is, you would want to basically take the probability of them making the shots that they took, and I guess you would reward them for making harder shots.
Yeah, I think that's right. I like game score. I think if you took game score and adjusted it by the player's plus minus in that game,
right,
and also the quality of the opposition, I think you could come up with something interesting there. In terms of getting into like more advanced stuff, I want to do a couple episodes on sort of the frontiers of NBA analytics at some point here. It's a fairly complicated topic and it's pretty dry, so I want to spend some more time researching it and preparing material to make it as digestible as possible for people. But one thing that I'm really interested in is the SportsVU data synergy stats have something called quantified shot quality, which is when you take a shot, how close is the defender to you? And if you're a player that often has good quality shot quality, that means that you are probably pretty good at creating your own shot. Now, it might also mean that you stand in the corner and you have LeBron James on your team and he's always getting you good shots. But if you have high volume and good quantified shot quality, you're probably good at creating your shot. They have a second stat called quantified shot making, which is given the quantified shot quality, so given the difficulty of shots you're taking, are you above or below average for the average difficulty of shot you're taking? And the combination of those two things gives some really interesting data. And unfortunately, we can't get any of that data because that data is private. But I think something there might really give good insight into who the better players are.
Yeah, and they teased that briefly last year in the playoffs when they were saying, the Cavs' three-point shooting is so unsustainable. Well, no duh.
Right.
I love how much they revel in that.
The Cavs making 24 threes in a game. Well, that's unsustainable. Yeah, I mean, it would just be really awesome to know if the reason why you lost a game is because you played like crap and the other team was like amazing defensively and forced you into bad shots, or if you actually were getting a bunch of good shots, you just got unlucky that night. And right now, the public doesn't have access to that information. All the NBA teams do. So they have really good vision, you know, they can know that, and it would just be fascinating to know, but unfortunately the data is private.
Who's the next great young player that could break into next year's MVP discussion, and the MVP discussions for the foreseeable future, and why isn't it Kyrie Irving? I wanted to actually. Well, he's the greatest player of all time already.
Yeah, obviously.
So I wanted to start with Kyrie Irving, and I'm not as down on Kyrie Irving as some are, but I'm certainly not as high. And I think you can boil down Kyrie's anti-MVP case to one thing. Whenever LeBron has not been in the game, the Cavs cannot win. And so you say what you want about his effort or his defense or his offense or whatever. They don't win with him. And so it's kind of a moot point. So comes a time when Kyrie
I
can...
something really quickly. I want you to finish your point, but I want to say something really quickly. The advanced stats all think Kyrie is terrible as well. So it's not just that he's not able to win with LeBron. Like, the advanced stats agree with the case that Kyrie isn't very good. Sorry, continue.
Well, I don't think the advanced stats say he's terrible. I think they say he's certainly not as good as people
relative to other MVP candidates.
Sure, sure. He definitely, his advanced stats say that his narrative far outpaces his play. But he's still a positive player overall. The team can win when he's on the court, he's just not going to win those. It's not going to happen. And I don't know if he actually has the offensive upside to make the team. I think they could win with him on the court. I just don't think he could ever hit MVP. When it comes for the next great young player, obviously the one that comes to mind of our minds.
Can I say my thing on Kyrie first?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Kyrie, if I had to handicap like all of the players in the NBA and the probability that they get MVP sometime in the next 5 years, Kyrie would probably be like number three or number four on my list. Like, well, maybe that's not right. He would be one of the top 10 players on my list. And it's because he's so young, right? Like, he just turned 25, the day before yesterday or 3 days ago or something. And
happy birthday, Kyrie.
Yeah, he's already so good offensively. And like I said in the previous question, we don't have access to his quantified shot quality data, but he takes a lot of bad shots. And if he can get better at his sort of efficiency, he's already a hyper-efficient player offensively. If he can get better at that, and I think there's a lot of room for him to do that, combined with just passable effort on defense, I think there's a chance that he can be like one of these guys that averages 31 points per game. And, you know, especially like, say, maybe 2 years from now, Kyrie will be 27. LeBron will be 34, 35. And yeah, you could have a situation where, you know, Kyrie is sort of, you know, playing 38 minutes a game and getting 31 points and, you know, let's say 7 or 8 assists. And I think that might be good enough to be MVP, depending on who else comes into the league.
Certainly. Do we want to just say the name together? I'll count down from three. 3, 2, 1, Jokic. You didn't do it.
I didn't know where you were going with that. I can't believe I forgot about my favorite player in the NBA.
Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, Jokic needs to lose some weight. His conditioning has gotten sort of progressively worse over the last 18 months, and it's actually pretty concerning, right? Like he's starting to look a little doughy out there, but he's already like, what is he by RPM now? Like the fifth best player in the league?
Seventh.
Oh, wow. He's a precipitous fall. He's seventh, but he is like 0.15 away from being fifth. And he's obviously young. His game is one that sort of like generates a lot of highlights, and he's only... he's only going to get better. He's 22 years old. He just turned 22, actually.
His passing as a 7-footer is the most special I've ever seen.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Arnav has said in hushed tones when no one's listening that he thinks he might be a better passer than LeBron.
Well, yeah, we actually discussed this in a group text. They're very different types of passers.
They are.
Just
getting Arnav to say anything even remotely negative about LeBron, and that's not negative about LeBron, but it's not laudatory to LeBron.
Right.
So I'm counting it as negative. Like that. I mean, and you know, I trust his opinion there. Like that guy can pass, and he's on SportsCenter every night, and I think that helps for MVP candidacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another one that has to be mentioned is Karl Anthony Towns, who has not been loved by the advanced metrics, not even close to the
same.
Yeah,
he's been good the last sort of 6 weeks, though.
Right. His offensive upside is incredible. It's just about him figuring out the defense is what would basically need to happen.
Yeah, I think those are two good choices. I think Leonard he's not that young.
Yeah, he's not a young guy.
He is still pretty young. I think he's 25, right?
Well, yeah, I think like 25. The spirit of the question, though.
Yeah, sure, sure, like, sure.
Everyone knows Kawhi Leonard.
Right. I can't say, you know, Russell Westbrook or...
Right. Those young guys. I mean, they're young.
I think James Harden has a good shot at MVP. I think Jokic and Karl Anthony Towns would probably be at the top of my list that also has Irving on it.
Yeah, I think you could throw in there a guy like Wiggins, possibly. His ability to score the ball has been unbelievable.
I wish I had a laugh track here.
Listen, I don't think he's great by any means right now. If he could figure out how to do anything other than score,
Arnav were here, he would have just hung up on you.
Joel Embiid, if he could stop being injured. So those are some.
Yeah, Embiid is not on my list. I think Embiid is. Look, it pains me to say this. I think he's done. The Greek Freak should be up there.
Right. Yep. It's insane how young he is because he's been in the league for so long. Okay, let's move on to the next question. This one's from The Nightman Cometh, which is from a terrible TV show. I'd love to hear your takes on the West, assuming we make it to the finals. How our most likely opponent will stack up. I consider those to be Golden State, San Antonio, and possibly Houston. So I think we already actually went through Golden State and San Antonio. Maybe let's just talk about Houston here.
Yeah. This should probably be our last question. I love watching the Houston Rockets play. I think that is a fairly unpopular opinion in NBA circles. People don't like their sort of threes and layups and the James Harden march to the free throw line thing. But I just think what James Harden is doing is so neat. I think his ability to sort of figure out what the cheat code for the real life version of the NBA game is sort of really cool. I love that they're such an analytics focused organization. So I like the Rockets. I don't think they would pose too big of a problem for the Cavs in the in a possible finals matchup. I just think that we have a better supporting cast than James Harden does. And I think that over a long series, we would learn how to defend James Harden in such a way that he's not quite as effective as he is when you see him every once in a while. It's like facing a knuckleballer in baseball. If you get limited exposure to knuckleballers, they're really tough. But if you face them time and time again, I think major league hitters would dial in on him. I think it's the same with James Harden. You learn how not to foul him after increased exposure. But maybe I'm being naive there. Maybe they would be a big problem. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they are similar to the Celtics, in my opinion, where James Harden certainly has more defensive upside than Isaiah Thomas, a lot more when he wants to try.
Yeah,
there's not much that a 5'8 guy can do. He probably tries harder than anyone else on the court. He's just going to be abysmal. But you're right, where they're kind of a one-man show. And that one man is absolutely incredible, but I will throw my hat in the ring with LeBron James over James Harden. And it helps that you have a guy like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love to round that out.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have shooters, and that would definitely be a problem.
We got shooters.
I know, but you could just imagine them taking three games just on the strength of like sort of unsustainable shooting and then it coming down to a, you know, tricky game seven.
And that's what Daryl Morey said on that podcast with Zach Lowe is, you know, we don't know how we can get past a team like Golden State, which has, you know, multiple two MVPs on it and just one of the most, if not the most talented team in NBA history. You have to increase your volatility. And yeah, I mean, I think they could take a few games. It's a 7-game series. It's not a 9-game series. It's not a 13-game series.
Yeah, something crazy could happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we can save the other. There's a few more questions that are really interesting. I think we should do next time.
Yeah, we should keep them. But we've been going for an hour, so
yeah.
I think it's time to wrap up. You have anything else you want to mention quickly?
Yeah, I mean, if you live in Ohio and you're looking to get into the Blue Jackets, I don't think I'm tooting my own horn here. I think my podcast, The Blue Line Reconstruction, is a really good place to start. We try to take a mathematical approach similar to this podcast, and one of my friends actually texted me and he said I didn't know anything about hockey before I started listening to your podcast, and now I feel like you talk about it in a way that I can get it. So, check it out. I think the Blue Jackets are a lot of fun. I know a lot of people who like basketball don't love hockey, but
Yeah, let me just say my piece here. So I make fun of your podcast every show because it's hilarious, but it is actually a very good podcast. And the NHL playoffs are about to start. NHL playoff hockey is pretty exciting stuff. The desire visible on the ice of all the players is insane, and the stakes are super high, and it's some good stuff. So yeah, if you want to get into it, give it a listen. Anything else, Josh?
That's it for me.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA Eastern Conference's second place team. I know, brutal. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. I think we're probably going to keep doing, I liked that that Reddit idea to solicit questions from people. I think we'll probably keep doing that. But if you have other questions, you can email us or tweet us. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs.